Our next guest has assisted over 500 victims of what she calls non-consensual pornography, and what the people who market it call revenge porn. She helped the FBI investigate the owner of a revenge porn website and self-described professional life ruiner. Her 2015 book about that work is Rebel in High Heels. Dr. Charlotte Laws, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start at the beginning of your story. How did you get involved in the investigation into Hunter Moore, who was the owner of the revenge porn website Is Anyone Up?
My daughter had taken a sequence of pictures in her room, in the privacy of her room, and she sent them from her cell phone to her computer. And about 3 months after that, she was hacked. And about 9 or 10 days after that, the only topless picture she took ended up on the website for Hunter Moore. And she was absolutely devastated and called me and told me what had happened. And that's when the story began. I mean, I had to get that picture off. And in the process, we went to law enforcement. I contacted the FBI and I started reaching out to other victims. At the time, he had been hacking photos to put on his website, including my daughter's and other people's photos. And so I ended up contacting lots and lots of victims and working with all of them to try to get the content removed. And it was a huge ordeal. I had death threats from his followers. I had computer viruses. I had a stalker come to my house. I mean, it was huge ordeal. And finally, the FBI arrested him and the hacker that he had paid, and they went to jail.
How often does this type of thing happen? How prevalent is revenge porn?
Well, it's according to The Economist, there are 3,000 revenge porn websites in the world. And it's, I think a lot of people didn't really want to talk about it before, because back when I started the fight, nobody even knew what revenge porn was. I would call attorneys to try to get their help, and they just didn't have any clue what to do or what it was. And so, but as time has passed, now people are educated about it. And as people get more and more educated, I think people feel more comfortable. Victims feel more comfortable coming out of the woodwork and sharing their stories and going to some of the nonprofit organizations that will assist them. There's a cyber civil rights legal project with attorneys around the country who will help victims pro bono. There are resources at Cyber Civil Rights Legal Project with attorneys around the country who will help victims pro bono. There are resources at the Cyber Civil Rights website, even a hotline and other resources for victims. So, it is very common. And there's also sextortion and deep fakes, which are very similar to revenge porn, and they are reportedly on the rise. So deep fakes, for example, have, according to the BBC, have doubled in the last 9 months. And that means when you're taking, say, the head of a normal person and you're putting it on the body of a porn star and making it look like this average person is doing sex acts or is nude, that's what a deep fake or morphed porn is.
Let's get into that a little bit. How is deep fake pornography different from revenge porn? And what have you done to help victims?
Well, I counsel people when they contact me. I point them, as I said, to the various resources, some of which I already mentioned to you. And it's very difficult to combat. In fact, lots of companies and the government are really feverishly trying to find a remedy as far as some way to figure out what is an accurate portrayal and what is not. I mean, it's very hard. Deepfakes is more than just nudes, even though it's about 90% nudes and sex-related videos. It's also anything. I mean, it could be showing a politician saying something that they didn't really say. So everybody's trying. I mean, all of these people have come together to offer money to researchers to come up with some kind of software or something so that they can tell what is real and what is fake. I think it would be good to, even if you could just find something in the interim that allows you to determine what is possibly fake or real. In other words, something that says this is 20% chance this is real, or an 80% chance this is an accurate portrayal. I think that would at least help viewers or consumers know what they might want to trust or not trust. But yeah, it's definitely difficult because you can make a deep fake video for $20. You can find people online who will, right, you pay them $20 and they'll make it for you. So, that's pretty hard to combat. And the artificial intelligence is really quite advanced in that area.
I want to go back a bit and talk more about Hunter Moore and your experience with him. Can you tell me a bit more about his website called Is Anyone Up? And I also want to know how the release of the photos affected your daughter's life.
Well, it was truly devastating. I mean, it's devastating for victims. They kind of curl into a ball emotionally. They want to shut down, you know, their online presence, which is actually the worst thing you can do if you're a victim, because you want to build up the positive stuff so that that all shows up on Google and that the nude pictures are then pushed down to page 652. I mean, that's what you're trying to do. But it's just emotionally devastating. And they, you know, a lot of times they turn the knife inward and they blame themselves and they're just humiliated and shamed. And it's mostly women who are affected by revenge porn. So it's younger females usually, although 20% of the victims are over the age of 50. You know, she lost an acting gig off of it. She almost lost her job at the restaurant where she was working. Everybody in the restaurant, all the employees knew about this, which was really just embarrassing to her. And she didn't come out of her room for days. I mean, she just didn't want to even talk to anyone. And you know, she thinks, you know, thought about suicide, as did Katie Hill, as do many, many of these victims. It's 51% who contemplate suicide. Wow. So it's, so it's really, really devastating. And it was for her as well. And when I was talking to these various people, you know, as I got more involved with helping victims, I felt like a suicide hotline. I mean, a lot of these people didn't even know they were nude on the internet. I was the first one to tell them. And so, you know, they were in tears. They were freaked out. They didn't want to tell their families. You know, it's embarrassing. A lot of people don't want to say anything to their parents or to their friends or to their boyfriend. My daughter was really scared that her boyfriend would find out because he was very conservative. And she thought for sure he would break up if he found out that she had taken this picture of herself, a picture that she never shared with anyone and had no intention of sharing. But she thought he would break up. So she was very desperately trying to hide this from him. She didn't want my husband to know, her stepfather. She didn't want her father to know. Mm-hmm. So it was like I was the only one. And I have found that victims really need somebody there for them. It's very hard for them to try to get the material taken off the internet by themselves. They need someone to do it for them because they just feel so helpless and so violated.
So when you went to law enforcement about this investigation, how did they react?
Well, my daughter and I went to the Los Angeles Police Department, and a female middle-aged detective said, why would you take a picture like this if you didn't want it on the internet? That was her comment to my daughter. And so my daughter was very upset about that. And she did agree to open a case on it, but they definitely didn't want to do it. And I did learn as time went by that law enforcement just wasn't really equipped that well for cybercrime. They were used to brick and mortar crime, and something like this just was kind of something they weren't trained in and didn't really know much about. Then because we were so unhappy about the reaction from the Los Angeles Police Department, I contacted the FBI. I called them, and they initially told me to just file a report online, which I felt meant that they were just too busy and didn't really want to put any attention to it. So I said sarcastically, "Oh, I see. You help Scarlett Johansson when she gets hacked, but you don't help the average person." Mm-hmm. And the FBI person on the other lines gave a big sigh. All right, let me connect you to a detective. And that's when I spoke to someone, and they said there would be three detectives coming to the house later in the month. And in the meantime, before they came, I just started compiling as much evidence as I could about Hunter, about his website, about victims. And I had about a 12-inch thick file by the time they showed up at my house, which my husband thinks is why they took the case, partly because they had so many other victims and so much information. It probably made it a little bit easier for them. But I also think they took it because Hunter Moore was very high profile at this time. And the media thought he was super cool. Most people in the media were glorifying him. They were writing articles about him and how innovative it was and how creative he was to come up with this idea. This is so cool. And that was what we were up against at that time. I mean, the victim blaming was rampant and people were not on our side. Trust me, nobody was on our side. So,
I actually want to get into that a little bit. So I've been describing this segment about revenge porn to people. And I've noticed actually that a lot of the older people who are less familiar with technology have said the same thing to me, that victims shouldn't send those photos, shouldn't take those photos if they don't want them released. You know, going off of that a little bit, what do you think that the popularity of revenge porn says about our society's views towards female sexuality and the female body and shame around sexuality?
Well, I mean, I think this is, you know, a man's way to try to control women. I think that it still shows that we have this attitude that women are supposed to be virgins and they're supposed to never show their naked body and they're supposed to, you know, not be associated with sex. I mean, there is this puritanical view that is still lurking, obviously, because otherwise there wouldn't be people on the internet using it as a weapon against females, and it is mostly used against females. So it's obviously a way to, you know, humiliate them and to really silence them. And it's kind of interesting too, because one of the big arguments is this whole free speech argument. But the truth is that when you make women afraid to go online and you drive them away from their computers, what you're doing is you're allowing only the nastiest voices to be heard, the male voices to be heard, and you end up having less speech because the women don't want to be online. They're too afraid of harassment or revenge porn or sextortion or deep fakes or whatever it may be. And so you're driving people away from their computer and you end up with a society of less speech.
So you just mentioned sextortion. Can you explain to our listeners what exactly that term means?
Sextortion is basically, there are different ways that it can, you know, be used. It can be used, for example, to, like, say a perp gets a, has a nude photo of someone. Then they contact that person and say, oh, I have a nude picture of you. I'm going to disseminate it everywhere unless you send me more pictures, or unless you send me money, or unless you meet me in person and maybe have sex with me, or unless you get a nude picture of your friend and send that to me. And so, you know, people get trapped, and it's actually mostly minors. It's actually about half minors who get fall for this sextortion and who are victimized in this way. And very few of them actually go to the police. It's 17%. 50% of them tell their parents about it. So it's, you know, it's kind of almost this secret that, you know, lurks with them. So yeah, it's a very dangerous thing. It's a very scary thing. And it's very much related to revenge porn because it does have to do with nude photos.
Right. So those things that you just mentioned about sextortion, you know, threatening someone with their nude photos so that they'll do something for you, those are quite clearly illegal acts, right? But revenge porn is a little bit more gray, I think, under the law. So I just want to know, how does the law treat revenge porn?
Well, I mean, it's not really that gray, because we do have currently 46 states that have laws against revenge porn, plus DC and Guam. There have been efforts in Congress to pass a federal law, which I think is extremely important. The first two attempts failed, but there is a bill that is currently been proposed that's still in committee, and I'm hoping that that will get passed. And the reason why laws are important, one reason why having laws is important, is because the perpetrators in general, at least in my experience, I have found, are not very afraid of civil suits. They're very afraid of law enforcement. They're very afraid of going to jail. So, and I think one reason they're not afraid of civil suits is because they don't have any assets. A lot of times it's 20 to 30 year old guys. They live in their parents' basement. They just don't really care if somebody sues them. Hunter Moore was sued and he never even showed up in court for it. So, but yeah, there, you know, it is important. And the federal law is also important because we need a law that is consistent from state to state. And we need a law that protects all victims. And a lot of the laws that we have currently are not very strong. They're misdemeanors. Like in California, for example, you know, ours is a misdemeanor. And we had great difficulty even passing that when we did. And we were hoping to make it something that was either a felony or a wobbler. But at the time, there was something called realignment, which in California means that we had so many people in prisons that the legislature did not want any laws that made felonies so that more people could be in prison. So we really were barred from presenting it as a felony and trying to get it passed in that way. So yeah, the laws are extremely important, and other countries have passed laws, you know, UK and Israel, and it's, you know, it's been happening all over the world.
This series that I am doing is about technology and sexuality and the intersection of tech and sex and how technology has changed sexuality. So do you see technology companies and social media as complicit in the spread of revenge porn? And what could they be doing differently?
Well, I mean, they were more complicit up front when it all started back in 2012, 13, 14. Now they are trying to really step up to the plate, in my opinion, although there are attorneys who will disagree and say that they, you know, fight very hard to get content removed and they don't get a lot of cooperation from the various companies. But what technology companies tend to do is they kind of hide behind Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. And that is a law that basically says that many of these online companies are platform providers and not content providers. So in other words, you know, people go to their site and they post stuff and it's very hard to have control over all of that content because there's so much content. However, in recent years, you do have, you know, Facebook, you know, stepping up to the plate. They actually have 25 employees who specific duty it is to find revenge porn on their website and get it removed. You have Twitter and Reddit, and a lot of the websites really are stepping up to the plate and have revenge porn is against their terms of service. Google has a page where you can report it and they will hopefully remove it. As I said, sometimes they don't always do it. So that's why there's a lot of, you know, controversy about whether they're doing enough or not. But, you know, they are trying to help, it seems, in my view. And some people think that Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act should be overturned. There is a push in some corners to do that.
I want to pivot now to Katie Hill, who was a freshman representative in the House before she was forced to resign over the leakage of her nude photographs. I want to know what you make of this scandal, and how do you think that lawmakers can prevent what happened to Katie Hill from playing out the same way in the future?
Well, I mean, Katie Hill's reaction was very much in line with exactly how revenge porn victims react. And so I want to say that first is that, you know, her reaction was wholly appropriate for what was happening to her. And, you know, one of the big questions around that whole thing has to do with whether it's in the public interest, whether it's newsworthy to show a nude body of someone who's an elected official. Because some people will argue, oh, well, it's perfectly appropriate because that's newsworthy. If it's Anthony Weiner or Katie Hill, whoever it is, I don't think that's true. I think that I think personally that revenge porn should be an exception to the First Amendment, just like, you know, child pornography or incitement or obscenity, fighting words, libel, fraud, discrimination. So my view, that's not the case, but that's what some people argue. And there were websites who had a political motive who posted her photos. I believe it was Red State and I think the Daily Mail did. So yeah, I think that's kind of one of the big questions about that whole thing is should a public official or someone who's newsworthy, should their nude pictures be something that's out there? I think it's fine to talk about the pictures that they exist, but I don't think they should be allowed to be posted or distributed.
Is revenge porn a partisan issue in your experience?
It's funny because the Democratic Party was the opponent when we started trying to pass this in California. And the reason why is because the ACLU is very much wants to retain free speech and does not want laws against revenge porn. And the Democratic Party very much wants to do what the ACLU wants. I mean, they're in the same camp, so to speak. Whereas the Republicans like to put laws in place related to sex, right? So when we were trying to, you know, protect victims in the beginning, we were fighting against the Democrats. The Republicans were on our side initially. That's not the case anymore. I mean, it's changed, as I said, because there isn't the victim blaming that there was before. And everybody understands the harm that this does. So we have wonderful Democrats like Jackie Speier, who's trying so hard to get, a federal law passed, and we have, wonderful people from both parties who have come together to try to fight for this. But there's still a lot of politicians who just simply say they're not going to support it. And one of them is Adam Schiff. I've had meetings with lots of these different legislators, and he's one of the people I met with, and he said he's just not going to sign a federal law against revenge porn, period. He thinks it's a breach of free speech, and that's the end of the story. He's not going to do it. So there are people who just very stubbornly refuse to put something in place, and perhaps they just can't really comprehend, the harm it does. I don't know.
I want to ask you a little bit about the consumers of revenge porn, people who are actively seeking out revenge porn on the internet for their own pleasure. Are those people who are looking at revenge porn part of the problem? And, what can people do to reach them?
Well, I mean, yeah, they're definitely these subcultures who one thing that they have that they like, they enjoy their anonymity, and they kind of come from all corners of the country or the world to, come together and to then use this technology as a weapon against women. There was a teacher on Hunter Moore's website, and actually she wasn't on there yet, but they were all discussing it. So I knew the pictures were going to be uploaded any moment, right? Mm-hmm. And they were all discussing, like, you think she'll get fired, and, oh, this is great. And, so this was all of his followers and Hunter Moore were discussing it. And so then the pictures came up. And so I phoned the school, and I talked to the front desk and said, asked to speak to her. And they said she was in class and they took a message. Well, what had happened was that morning is she was teaching her students. The principal came in and said, please get your things together and go home. She's like, what? Why? She didn't understand it. And so she did what she was told, and she's walking out of the building, and the receptionist gives her my message, says, call this Charlotte Laws in California. She was in Kansas, by the way. So she walks into the parking lot and she calls me on her cell phone. And that's when I told her that, she was on the website. She had no idea. And that's why she had been asked to leave the school. And it was just, devastating. I mean, she just was, crying and screaming, and, it was really, really horrible. So yeah, and there, I've talked to quite a few teachers. I mean, probably, I don't know, maybe as many as 8 teachers or 10 teachers. Wow. So, which is a pretty big number, really. So, yeah.
Okay. So I'd also wanted to ask you about the term itself, revenge porn. When I've talked to people who don't know what revenge porn is or non-consensual image sharing, revenge porn sounds like a porn category of some sort. It's, it sounds like marketing language for pornography. What do you think of that term, and what are some alternatives to it?
Well, I mean, I do think it's an inaccurate term. Unfortunately, it's what's caught hold. So it's, it's very hard to change something once it's been established. But I do think non-consensual pornography is the best way to describe it. And funny enough, the porn world is very against non-consensual pornography because it takes business away from them and it gives them a bad name. So, they were kind of helping us fight against it, funny enough, when we were first starting out with it. There was even a lawyer from the porn world who was one of the lawyers who was helping our victims, and his wife was a porn star. And so they were like, and he was like, oh, well, us people in this world, we're really pissed off about this, and we got to help you get rid of this. So, so they can't be put in the same category, that's for sure. But yeah, it's just not an accurate term because it doesn't describe all the different things that can be related. It's not an X a lot of the time. And plus, it could be something like deep fakes, or it can be, other things that are related to that.
So going forward, what more changes would you like to see in laws and enforcement to help victims more?
Well, I do think, as I said, getting a federal law is very, very important. That's kind of the prime thing. And obviously having law enforcement trained and knowing what to do and how to handle these kinds of situations, having everybody aware of it, and having kind of the teamwork of the country to help fight the problem. The media has been really good in recent years as far as promoting the issue and, letting people know about the harm it does to victims. But as for laws, I mean, that's what I think is the best thing. It's a tough thing because you have all these other countries that can be involved, and many of those countries don't have laws in place. And it's very hard sometimes if you're trying to track down somebody who's in China or wherever it may be. You know, you sometimes have that kind of distance and the anonymity involved with the fact that it could be a perpetrator on the other side of the world. And so it is a tough thing. I mean, I think there's something we're always going to be fighting. But I think as technology gets better and better too, that will help. It'll be better if the companies, the tech companies and Google, et cetera, can find ways to, you know, get rid of that kind of content very quickly and not have victims waiting sometimes for 3 days or a week or maybe indefinitely and refusing to remove it. So I think the tech companies can really help a lot. And I do think they've stepped up to the plate in recent years. So I don't want to criticize them because they have been trying to do something about it.
Do you feel at all like you're playing catch up as video editing technology creates, you know, more morph porn, deepfakes, those sorts of things? You know, the technology is only going to get better at creating these sorts of things. Do you feel discouraged at all by that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a game of catch up. I mean, that's exactly what's happening right now. And it's, I'm not sure. I mean, hopefully, eventually, we will be on top of it and we will have the tools needed to eradicate the deep fakes and at least to be able to say this is not true and this is true and be able to weed it out. But right now we are behind, you know, in the technology, and those who are creating it are doing it more quickly and more efficiently than the people who are trying to stop it. So I hope that turns around eventually, but it is tough. It's just something we have to keep at and keep trying. And there are a lot of really good people trying to better that situation.
And you're one of them. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Luz. I really appreciate your perspective on this issue.
Thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Charlotte Luz is an anti-revenge porn activist. You can get her 2015 book about that work called Rebel in High Heels.